This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is the Honorable Tom Davis, former congressman from the 11th Congressional District in Virginia and chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. Tom is currently director of federal government affairs for Deloitte here in Washington, D.C. Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, Roger, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation. It's one of my favorite topics, government reform. And you were a chief reformer back in the 90s. Especially in terms of the procurement system, and you know, and I saw a blog that you did recently, March 11th on Federal Times. You talked about lean, smart government and how lean government could solve the host of budget woes that we have. And I really caught my eye, and it was a very interesting article. And I thought that's what we could focus on today, talk a little bit about. And much of the article talks about the history of the bureaucracy. And we'll touch on that first, but I wanted to give you a chance to sort of set the stage there and talk about the budget just real quickly, and the challenges we face and that dynamic as the backdrop to, you know, efforts that we see potentially moving forward and reforming how the government operates. So where are we with the budget?
Well, a couple things. We like to have these arguments about, is government too big or is it too small? And I always say, let's get the government we're paying for. Let's not overpay for what we're getting. And I think today, just because of the inefficiencies just in part of the structural system and the fact that we are still paying off indebtedness as a part of every dollar we collect, people don't feel they're getting their money's worth out of government. And that makes it harder to get increased revenue and the like. You got to remember, 100 years ago, the bureaucratic model was hailed by political reformers, political scientists, sociologists, and the like. This was the system where you were going to have basically professionals administering government at all levels. You were getting out the corruption of the big cities, the patronage machines, the no-show jobs. This was how it was supposed to develop, and it was supposed to be a very, very efficient model, and it worked that way for about half a century. Until, as with all things, it gets corrupted going up the food chain. Politicians start adding layer and layer of government and oversight to it. And the end result is you have a lot of people that, they're filling out forms that shouldn't have been printed. They're performing tasks that really don't need to be performed when you think about it. Somebody overseeing somebody who's overseeing somebody else just makes it very inefficient.
Yeah, and it's part of it's the politicians. And it's just the at a certain point, an organization or a bureaucracy sort of feeds on itself, doesn't it? It becomes parochial in a sense. As I worked in government for over 20 years, and you could see, agent after agencies, saying, "Well, I've got to recreate what this agency X has over here in terms of a procurement operation," rather than using a shared services model.
Everybody likes their own legacy system. There's no question about that, but it's a very inefficient way to operate. We don't all have our own grocery stores. We go to a cooperative grocery store. We all buy from the same thing. It's the most efficient way of doing things. It ought to be the same with a number of government services. It just doesn't seem to work that way because everybody likes to have their own carve-out.
Yeah, and one of the things that I wanted to talk about, historically you mentioned that the bureaucracy was not a bad word back in the to the 20th century, man.
No, it was an educated, professionally trained force. In fact, if you look at the British model, this was your elites were the people who went into the bureaucracy. But it has changed over time. And look, let's not blame the federal worker. Let's look at the politicians. Look, I always look at it this way. If you're not making any mistakes, you're probably not doing much of anything else either. And so we've lost our ability to innovate. We've lost our incentives to innovate. Everybody wants to just play it safe, stay in their box, do their job. And we become a government that is driven by regulations rather than outcomes. And the end result is we're not getting the outcomes that we need.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I want to spend some time talking about the risk reward dynamic. And you know, from my perspective, and I'd be interested in your thoughts. That you, to me, the biggest thing that I see is the oversight culture, and that as stifling. You mentioned innovation, and innovation's all the buzzword right now in the executive branch. We're going to innovate. Procurement, you know, in the wake of healthcare.gov, we've got to find better ways to do things and capture or embrace innovation. But I don't see how that's going to happen unless, you know, the oversight culture changes to some degree to accept some risk in the system. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, my thoughts are clearly along those lines. Look, the oversight mentality in government is now a gotcha oversight. We're just looking for people to pick on, people to make mistakes. If it's the other administration in particular, you try to tie it to the president, and that's what it's become. It's not the way it ought to operate. You know, I wrote the head of the investigation on Hurricane Katrina, and one person we signaled out as a hero was a doctor who broke in a flooded Walmart store and stole drugs so he could administer to people that were sitting up there in their coliseum, Superdome, who couldn't get meds. People had to go there. We had diabetics. Patients couldn't get it. The place was flooded, and you know, he broke every rule, but he saved lives. And sometimes that's what you have to do. And we had members of the committee who said this guy should be prosecuted. So you have that mentality back and forth, and that we lose sight of outcomes sometimes. We're so driven by regulations, and when somebody goes outside a regulation to try to accomplish something and it doesn't succeed, there's just hell to pay. And so everybody's afraid of making going outside the box.
Yeah, that, you know, Katrina is a great example. You know, I was at GSA at the time, and you know, the policy office that writes the FAR and that sort of thing, they were all senior. Former warranted contracting officers still have their warrants, and GSA, they're part of my office, and they turned into contracting officers on an operational level throughout that. We were doing a 8-hour shift, 24-hour, three shifts, 24 hours a day, just awarding contracts to support Katrina. But in the aftermath of that, what happened? You know, of course you should do an oversight, learn lessons learned and whatnot, but we spent a lot of time trying to explain transactions that were to get results, to deliver water or whatever, and it just it was pretty demoralizing, quite frankly.
Roger, we saw the same thing in Iraq War contracting. You had opponents of the Iraq War, and there were a lot of them up there going after contractors who were out there on the battlefield and had to get the mission accomplished. They had to use cash. They had to get the job done right away. People needed to get paid. Troops needed to be fed. You had all of those issues out there. So. I think they acted responsibly given the battlefield conditions that they were operating under. But, of course, it looks terrible once you come in and say, well, you violated the regulations. So we need to focus on outcomes. For the record, I defended those people at the time. I said, what would you have done?
Right.
But the fact that they had to go through hearing after hearing after hearing, news release after news release that was condemning what they'd done, the next guy is just at that point afraid to take any shot at all.
Yeah.
And to do anything outside the box.
Right. Hey, so what, do you have suggestions on how we change that dynamic? It's a difficult ship to turn, right? I mean, it's very political.
It starts with leadership.
Yeah.
Number one. Secondly, people need to understand emergency situations are exactly that. They're emergency situations. The government does compete out contracts in advance of emergencies. So in an emergency, they can go right to a big company to get certain things done, and they have, quote, competed it out, albeit under different circumstances.
Right.
So there are ways around that, but clearly you have to have people, leaders, that are willing to take risks under those extenuating circumstances to get the job done.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting when you're talking, I thought of a quote. There's a quote from William McKnight, who's the CEO of a 3M company, and McKnight Management Principles. And I recommend that to anybody. It's a great quote. It talks about, management oversight that is destructively critical destroys innovation. And I think that's what we see right now. Yeah, across.
Roger, we're in a very poisonous political process right now where oversight is easily abused by both sides. and not always utilized, I think, correctly. There's a lot of pressure when you have an opposition party controlling committees to go after the president. We've seen this under Bush and Obama when the other party controls.
Yep.
So it's just unmerciful. And we lose sight of really what's right. But the one thing that's been lost in all this is the institution of Congress was supposed to be an independent branch of government. And what has really evolved over the last couple decades, it's become an appendage of or opposition to the president, really evolving into a parliamentary system, which doesn't work very well in a balance of powers structure.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, right now we have to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to the Honorable Tom Davis, former congressman from the 11th Congressional District here in Virginia, my former congressman, former chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. Tom currently serves as the director of federal government affairs for Deloitte LLP. We'll be right back, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of where we are in the government and talk a little bit about duplication. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Tom Davis. Tom is former congressman from the 11th Congressional District here in Virginia and chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. Tom currently serves as the director of federal government affairs for Deloitte LLP. And Tom, when we took the break, I had mentioned duplication, and I wanted to talk a little bit about duplication of functions across the federal enterprise. I know GAO did a report back on, was it a year ago or so, maybe a little longer, about identifying 17 areas where agencies were duplicating each other's efforts. I think that's a great opportunity. There's a sweet spot there to save a lot of money from a shared services perspective, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, Roger, we don't have any choice. We're running out of money. You have 10,000 baby boomers a day retiring, going into the retirement systems that are going to just be soaking up more and more money from the federal government, and something's got to give. So we've got to take a look at making savings, and shared services is really kind of low-hanging fruit. What you're fighting, though, is institutional resistance, because everybody likes to have their own legacy systems. They like to have their own services that they can preside over. And so it's new in the culture of the federal government, but we're seeing it more and more in state governments, in the private sector, with the cloud and everything else. So I think it's the wave of the future. And it's really, at the end of the day, I think it gives a greater benefit to taxpayers and better savings, and we can become more efficient with it.
Yeah, as someone, I worked at GSA for all my career, and that sort of duplication of effort was, and the parochial, I've got to have my own system or my own people doing things. It was always a challenge for GSA in terms of its acquisition support services, and it continues as probably worse now than it was when I was there. One of the things I was thinking when you were talking is it time to do some sort of BRAC-like committee, or how would you go about getting people to focus on this management issue? I guess President Obama back a couple of years ago had some agenda for reform of government and trying to address some of this, but how do you think it ought to be tackled? Is it
every president has their own
right
to implement. here's the problem. It can, I don't say easily be done, but if the Office of Management and Budget has the authority to put enforcement mechanisms in place between government agencies. Congress really doesn't, because Congress appropriates by agency, and every subcommittee on appropriations is focused just on that agency's. But OMB has the ability to do that. The difficulty has been, given the budget situations over the last 4 years really, is that the Office of Management and Budget just becomes the Office of Budget. And the management side of that really takes a second place. You've had some good people in place there, but they've never been given the enforcement authority that they need to try to enforce shared savings, consolidation of centers, those kind of things that you really need. And it's got to come from the top. It's got to be driven by the president. I think of the recent presidents, the one that did the most in this area was probably Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
He had a vice president, Al Gore, who was big into reinventing government, and
right.
Osborne Gabler's book, Reinventing Government. And you really saw some innovation during that time on the procurement side, as well as the administrative side. But then you get a new administration comes in, and they want to do it their way, and you'll lose that momentum. You don't get the continuity out of OMB that you probably ought to.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. You know, I just remember the National Performance Review and all that effort. And so it seems to me that that's if that's going to be done from an executive branch perspective, it really that sort of Clinton model, the idea of the vice president or somebody, you know, shepherding or leading that initiative, that seems to me be what it would take.
Well, Roger, I came into Congress and the Democrats had controlled the first 2 years of the administration, but there was still a lot of work to be done. And so Clinger-Cohen, which was a huge, procurement mm-hmm. bill that passed, I was a lead co-sponsor in that, actually wrote some sections of that bill. We had Republicans saying, why are you working with the Democrats? And it's, well, because they were working in a very constructive way.
Yep.
And we had a lot of reforms. In fact, in some cases, you had the Republicans in Congress working with a Democratic president to bring things about, and you had some Democrats that were resisting it. But credit goes to the Clinton administration in some of these areas. You know, some of the landmark changes that were made came during that time. Haven't seen a lot since that. President Bush had a managerial agenda. President Obama does, but they have not been really able to implement it the way that the Clinton years did. And like everything else, they were good for their time, but over 15 years, it's time to update them. And we need to update them and refine them in some ways. And in the case of the consolidations and shared services, this is just an idea whose time has not just come. It's in some ways it's past, but we need to continue to go that direction.
I think the flip side of the duplication is the barriers that agencies create between each other. Is that, I mean, that to me, that seems to be part of the key to addressing, sort of promoting a more shared services model.
Look, that's the nature of man. Do people produce turf and barriers?
Right.
It's not just you see it at the federal executive branch level. You see it in Congress. We talk about the partisan fights. Those are the ones we read about in the papers. The nastier fights, the ones where members really dig in the deepest, are in committee jurisdictional fights. That's why it was so difficult to get a Department of Homeland Security up and running in an efficient way. Nobody wanted to give up any kind of authority under those things. So it's the nature of man, and that's why you have an OMB. That's why you have an Office of Management and Budget, because in theory, they can step in and do a lot of these things. If they will take the a time and attention to do that. But they're usually so overburdened just on the budgetary side, and you get a new group in that really doesn't understand how government operates, that it's
right.
really difficult to get this stuff done.
Right. Hey, I wanted to turn a little bit to information technology. I mean, it seems, from a duplication or barrier perspective, and you mentioned the cloud in particular as a way to leverage, resources and save a lot of money. The information technology is at the center of this duplication, it seems to me, and as you have observed in your blog, can you talk a little about the difference between the way the private sector looks at IT investments versus the way the government looks at it?
Sure. The biggest difference is this: in the private sector, we look at IT as an investment, something that will save us money. And so we try to hurry up and get this stuff done. We usually do it in chewable, chunkable bites with deliverables each way as opposed to a massive system. But we look at IT as an investment. In government, it's really, given the appropriation process, it's viewed as a line item. So when you need to cut something, you'll just slow down the implementation of an IT project. You have continuing resolutions. You get sequestering. Things that it's hard to get continuity on these projects because government managers don't know when their money is coming. No, they don't know how much they're going to get year to year. And so it becomes just a line item like that. And you can't treat IT that way. It just loses its effectiveness. And that's what's happened over years in Republican and Democratic administrations and Republican and Democratic Congresses. We don't look at this as an investment.
Yeah, and I think to that point, too, it's the fits and starts, that historically in IT at agencies, it's not looked. It is definitely not looked at from a strategic or treated from a strategic perspective. Again, it is just really it's a pot of money and it's a line item, and people aren't focusing on the outcomes to get back to what we discussed in the first segment.
I'll take it one step further. When agency heads or CIO gets money in IT, they tend to spread it across like peanut butter into a lot of different ways, so nothing gets completed. You're better off completing some projects and going on to the next project. And they don't look at it that way. Everybody gets a share. And so really nothing really seems to happen. And you don't get the investments you need and the savings you need and the efficiencies you need as a result.
Yeah. I want to get your thoughts on another thing I was, you know, when I listened to you, is that, you know, I was thinking about modular contracting and, you know, the Clean Cone Act and endorsed that or, you know, provided for modular approaches to IT. I mean, it seems to me in the government context, that makes sense, you know, from an implementation perspective. But the culture of government is, you know, you come in for 4 years or you're head of an agency or department for a couple of years. I've got to make my splash, you know, modular, you know, contracting and building on a foundation of success. It seems to me that they're at cross purposes. Does that make sense?
Sure it does. Everybody, you're there for a short time. You want to leave your own legacy, your own mark on it, and you lose the continuity. Businesses have continuity. And you don't really have that at the federal level. You have administrations changing, you have personnel changing all the time, and you basically have your policy issues changing. And it's just, you couldn't run a business that way. It's hard to run the government that way. And it makes it harder to finish these things on time.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, we have to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to the Honorable Tom Davis, former congressman from the 11th Congressional District in Virginia and chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. Tom currently serves as the director of federal government affairs for Deloitte LLP. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is the Honorable Tom Davis, former congressman from the 11th Congressional District here in Virginia and chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. Tom currently serves as director of federal government affairs for Deloitte LLP. And Tom, you know, we've talked a lot in the first couple segments about a lot of the challenges government faces. And I know your blog on March 11th and Federal Times website talked about and promoted the idea of smart, lean government. And I'm just going to open it up and say, what is that or what's the vision behind that?
Well, that's a good question. Smart, lean government is basically the recognition that one size doesn't fit all. It's increased collaboration among agencies. It's information sharing, not just at the federal level, but between federal, state, and local government. It's the old contest of uniformity versus flexibility, and how do you get into the kind of flexibility you need to govern? Smart lean government is a model that allows those kinds of things. It allows decision makers to be flexible, to share services, to not really work out of a one size fits all inside the box mentality.
In terms of trying to accomplish that, you know, I know folks are looking at like ACT, IAC has got a working group focusing on that and on smart lean government. Is a first step just trying to, in a certain sense, almost map out government and what's going, you know,
cultural change. Roger, it's a cultural change. It's the elimination of silos inside these different departments, legacy systems. It's the incentivizing collaboration. It's eliminating duplication. And it's measuring performance properly. So it's more outcome-based, measuring outputs versus inputs. And what we have tended to do, for some of the reasons we discussed previously, is government measures inputs. And we ought to be focused on outcomes. Businesses certainly focus on outcomes. And the American public really is focused on what comes out of government, not how did you get to this product. The difficulty comes, again, from the bureaucratic model, 100 years ago, where we were fighting corrupt political machines. And we spent so much time and effort making sure nobody steals any money. And in point of fact, it's hard to do that, but they can't do much of anything else either. And so how do you find that right balance? The trade-off is this. You're going to get people that take advantage of this system and that don't perform as well in some cases. or that want to innovate and the innovation doesn't work. Or you get a little bit of money you may lose in graft, but the trade-off in efficiency, in my opinion, is worth it. And you know, that's the trade-off. There's no silver bullet here of one system that works perfectly because you have human beings that are doing the work. But with this government model we have today does not really work in an efficient way, and we can't afford it anymore.
Yeah, it truly does. The current model truly does, you know, stifle risk taking and innovation, and outcome-based, you know, measuring. What, you know, to me, it would one measure would basically be, you know, customer satisfaction with your government, right?
Well, look at the VA claims backlogs.
Yes,
that's a very measurable output. Okay, and we can put everything else, or the security clearance backlog. Now there's a danger if you move up security clearances and do them too fast, you may miss some things. You've got to put resources into those things, but you have to recognize that by getting more security clearances faster, basically you are lowering the cost for that kind of work, because right now having a security clearance is a commodity by itself.
Yes, absolutely.
You have a clearance, that's worth money. It's money in the bank. They can train you to do the job because we've been so stingy with this, and it means government not short-circuiting how you get a clearance. There may be some ways you could expedite the process. I don't know. But it does mean putting resources into that, because you recognize at the end you're going to be really saving money and creating efficiencies.
Yeah.
And we don't make those kind of decisions. It's just not the way the government's geared to make it. And the other thing is, when somebody makes a mistake, if you try something and it doesn't work, you get hauled up before some committee. You get the GAO comes after you. We used to say that the Lloyd group of auditors, you know, the auditors come in and bayonet the wounded. Well, Congress certainly does that when something
right.
goes wrong. They're in there, and this, you know, a poor administrator who's trying to do things right and might have been wrong on something or it wasn't implemented gets called up, so the next guy's not going to take a chance.
Absolutely.
But I guess to reemphasize again, if you're not making mistakes, you're not innovating. And we've got to tolerate some level of mistakes being made along the way, and some level of corruption that comes with that, to gain the efficiencies we want. That's the trade-off you have, but
right.
the current system doesn't work.
Yeah, your blog mentions a service integration model. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah. Look, it goes into shared services. I'll give you a great example is security clearances. Security clearances right now, a lot of different agencies have their own platforms and their
mm-hmm.
own criteria. You ought to be able to get cleared through one way, and it's going to last and be used across agencies. It doesn't work that way. You go from agency to agency, you got to go on a separate security process, a separate criteria. There are different levels of security clearance. I recognize that and don't want to change that. But there's no reason that one agency has to get a slightly different criteria than another in most of these areas, particularly for an interim basis to hire somebody and get them up and running. But because everybody likes their own legacy system, that's the way it's going to be. It goes the same with a call center, with data centers. They like to have control of their own people. There's no reason these data centers can't store data for multi-agencies and have it taken out of there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, another area that, you know, strikes me as a former government manager that is a huge drag on the system is the HR system. It's so complicated and so complex. To the extent you want to change culture or, you know, bring in, you know, new folks, that's definitely an area that needs reform. If the government's going to attract folks, you can in that the talent that it needs to, you know, change the culture and move in this direction.
Well, we could have a whole show just on talent and how you get hired, and that's a whole different topic altogether.
Sure.
And we know the current system doesn't work, but one of the problems is you don't have a lot of interagency sharing on this kind of stuff. It's difficult sometimes to move between agencies. And so, as a result of that, it's much more onerous than it needs to be. Hiring people, getting people in place, good people in place in an expeditious way is beneficial to the government. But if you go to a job fair and you find that bright kid that can do the job, by the time you get all the clearances necessary and you run them through the bureaucracy, some other private firms come up and hire them and put them to work the next day.
Yep.
So we're just losing good people. And as a result of that, you know, we're losing our ability to produce the outcomes we want.
Right, right. The innovation we need desperately. Tom, we have to take our last break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to the Honorable Tom Davis, former congressman from the 11th Congressional District in Virginia, chairman of the House Government Reform Committee, and currently director of federal government affairs for Deloitte LLP. And we'll talk a little bit about acquisition reform, what prospects for it. I mean, the acquisition system, quite frankly, reflects the customer, the bureaucracy, the silos, the duplication, the overregulation. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is the Honorable Tom Davis, former congressman from the 11th Congressional District in Virginia and former chairman of the House Government Reform Committee, currently director of federal government affairs for Deloitte LLP. And Tom, I know this is one of your favorite topics. And, you know, back in the old days, right, so to speak, you were a champion of acquisition reform. So I can't, you know, when we're talking about smart lean government, you know, the acquisition system reflects this customer, the bureaucracy, and it's very process driven and risk averse. And, you know, I just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, prospects for reform. You know, where do we go from here? I mean, we are, as far as my career in procurement for the last, you know, 30 years when I count, you know, since leaving government, it's the most risk averse, oversight driven system right now that I've ever experienced.
Well, we could have a long talk about the acquisition system, what works, what doesn't work. And Congress has been schizophrenic through the years in terms of how they address acquisition reform, because every time there's a major failure, somebody holds a hearing and comes up with a new idea. The difficulty has been that we tend to legislate anecdotally over something going wrong and try to fix the last problem and don't anticipate the new ones. Look, I put an addition on my house. I went out for bids quickly. They came in. I didn't have to worry about having 8A contractors, small business contractors, certain percentages on this kind of thing. I didn't have to go to a best and final. I didn't worry about a bid protest along the way. It was transparent to me. I was making the decision. But it didn't need to be that way. As a result of that, I got the thing done on time, under budget, and we move on. In government, because of the transparencies that we built into this thing and our sense of fairness and our sense of giving everybody a shot, we build in inefficiencies to the system to begin with. And that's just a given in government. That's what people opt for. We don't want contracts let in secret, very hard, fast decisions, because you tend to get a lot of corruption out of that. Having said that, we try to do too many things with the procurement system. Some people look at this as a pie, and we have to split this pie among a lot of different competing groups and make sure that we buy America for this, that we have so much set-aside business for certain groups and the like. That builds inefficiencies into the system. Sometimes they want everything driven by price, but price isn't value.
Right.
There's the old cartoon of the astronauts getting ready to launch and go up to the moon, and one of them says to the other, "Well, I sure feel reassured knowing that this construction of this rocket went to the lowest bidder." There are some things that, and particularly in the IT area, where a value component has to come in. But the reality is no two procurements are exactly alike. And if you have a trained cadre of procurement officers with a wide toolbox, you could do fixed price, you can have your cost plus, you can have share and savings, whatever, and they'd look at this and make their decisions independently in terms of what's best for the government, how do I accomplish my mission. You know, a lot better results than you currently do, where a lot of this is driven by one central component theme, because procurements are very, very different. And that's our problem in essence. And there are going to be mistakes made. Procurement officers are going to pick the wrong vehicle sometimes. I'm a big fan of share of savings contracts, which means we'll come in and we'll fix this and save the government money. And by the way, if you don't save any money on this, we don't get paid. The difficulty with that is these work really well because the government's not out any money unless they save it. And sometimes they wouldn't have gone to this vehicle if it weren't sharing savings. But the problem is when the GAO comes and audits later, they said, oh, you could have done this on a cost-plus basis or something instead of this, and you could have done this more efficiently. And so it doesn't stack up as well. So, you can argue any way you want, but your individual procurement officers ought to be trained, they ought to be well paid, they ought to be incentivized. People bring a contract in under budget and on time, there ought to be a bonus for that. And particularly, I'm talking about these really large procurements on that. But reward them on the basis of outcomes, not did they check every box and follow every rule along the line, and you end up instead of with a thoroughbred of a product, a three-hump camel. And that's so many times what we come up with.
Right. You know, and listening to your thoughts there, it strikes me that the Monday morning quarterbacking, you mentioned the GAO and coming in and saying, well, you could have done it this way or that way. That goes to price too. And right now it truly is the marketplace is very price. Is price seems to be the one thing that folks want to measure as opposed to value.
Yeah, two complaints I hear, and I guess this depends where you sit, is that you are doing a LPTA, the low cost technically acceptable type of, but you're also you're getting a lot of set asides for small businesses that are really procurements that are tens and sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars just to try to meet your goals. Well, that doesn't make any sense for a small business to oversee something of that size. There are a lot of small pieces that can be broken up, or you can have a large contract and let the large contractor pick a certain component of small business to meet your goals. Let them pick it and integrate it. Government's not a good integrator of this stuff. And so I think both of these, although they have, I think, good public policy rationale for making it, at the end of the day, they build inefficiencies into the process that, as taxpayers, we pay for it. And I just think we're coming to the day where we don't have that ability anymore, and we're hurting our missions.
Yeah, it's a question of balance, and it's almost smart inefficiencies, right? In the federal system, you're going to have, the socioeconomic programs and that sort of thing, but you still got to make good business decisions about when something is appropriate to be set aside versus not. And too often you do get a lot of the external stakeholders and the roles they play can be positive, but also can be counterproductive.
Well, you also get the thing, should this be outsourced or should we do it inside government? And those are questions government faces every day. The one thing contracting does is sometimes you can get an expertise you can't find inside of government, and you don't want to try to pay for and maintain inside of government because you just don't need it all the time. I think contracting under those conditions, everybody gets it. Second time, the reason is that sometimes these are for short durations, and you don't want to have to hire up people because in government it's hard to fire them. If you don't need them, duration, you can hire a contracting firm. If they don't work out, you can fire an individual. You don't have to worry about their rights as workers and all this stuff. And so that has worked efficiently in some cases. On the other hand, there are some things that probably government can do better than contractors, and we don't ever really take an honest look at what should be insourced and what should be outsourced. We have some criteria about, is this essential to government?
Or inherently governmental function,
yeah,
or closely associated.
I never like those definitions.
Yeah.
But for me, I wanted to say, what's going to work best for the taxpayer? That ought to be our guiding monument here. Does this work for the taxpayers? And then you use the vehicle. And the guy in government who's responsible for that can make that decision, who's closest to the action, who's responsible for the outcome. Let them make the determination, not some regulation.
Right. On that note, I like that standard, what's best for the taxpayer. That's a great way to end the show. And so I want to thank my guest, the Honorable Tom Davis, former congressman from the 11th Congressional District in Virginia and chairman of the House Government Reform Committee and currently director of federal government affairs for Deloitte LLP. Tom, great to have you on the show. I really enjoyed our discussion. Thanks,
Roger,
a lot.
Thanks. Let me just say, we got a lot of great federal employees. Let's let them do their job. Let's empower them.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. And
right.
Thanks again for being on the show.
Tom.
And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.